The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 86 from the Heikigan Roku. Yunmen's bright light. Yunmen taught, everyone has their own light. If you want to see it, you can't. The darkness is dark, dark. Now, what is your light? He answered, himself, the storeroom, the gate. He then said, it would be better to have nothing than to have something good. Yunmen taught, everyone has their own light. If you want to see it, you can't. The darkness is dark, dark. Now, what is your light? He answered himself, the storeroom, the gate. He then said, it would be better to have nothing than to have something good. So I was inspired by Melissa's talk yesterday, as I have been by all of these talks, even some of the ones I've given, I found quite inspiring. these talks that one person gives, but that we in some ways all participate in this atmosphere of practice and training. Now many days in, there is a sangha energy that comes forward in in everything we do, in our eating, in our walking, in the Dharma dialogues, and even in the talk. We pick these koans, or these koans pick us, and then in the talk, I try to present as clearly as I can the aliveness of the moment as it comes forward. And this aliveness of the moment, of course, includes you. All of us here together. And we play different roles. We play host and guest. We play Tenzo, and we play Shuso. We play participant. We play the one who cleans the meditation hall. So we step into all of these roles, and all of these roles are an opportunity to express the Buddha Dharma. This great chi mind, this great life force. It doesn't matter to me so much what we call it. We can call it a Buddha mind, or we can call it qi, or the Tao, the way. We can call it God, or Allah, or Hey You. There is something that human beings have dreamt of for eons, something that human beings have sensed, have been touched by, this spirit of life that is ungraspable. Dogen uses the word the wondrous Dharma, myoho, and this wondrous means weird, strange, wild, ungraspable. There is something that can never be put in a box. But this something is life itself. This something is the inexhaustible energy that propels us forward, that manifests now as this, now as that, now as me, now as you, and in these different roles, in these different activities, we commit ourselves to practice. As our Shuso was reminding us yesterday, this continuous practice. So our training period is 24 hours, and that we meet our life and we practice meeting our life in whatever is required in the moment. And in our tradition, our Zen way, we place a great value on a kind of flexibility. One of my favorite phrases is, today's enlightenment is tomorrow's delusion. So even a good thing, is the insight where you realize, just follow my breath, and you think, now, at last, why didn't someone tell me this? But when we encounter it genuinely, it is always a surprise. If it is not a surprise, it is not the Dharma. If it is what you expected, it is not the true Dharma. And so we encounter some insight about ourselves, about life, about Sangha. I am being supported by the whole universe. Wonderful, these moments of awakening, of insight that arise. And then if we try to hold on to that, we think, I am supported by everything. Then we run around parroting, being an imitation of who we used to be. And then we become stuck on, I am supported by the whole universe. And what was a good thing becomes the burden we carry forward. So these teachings are very tricky in that way. Yunmen's last comment here, nothing is better than a good thing. It would be better to have nothing than to have something good. So this noticing what comes up, appreciating whatever insights, whatever opening happens, and then leaving it where it is. When it arises, don't try to, if something has arisen, do not try to continue it, says Lin Chi. And when it goes, do not try to follow it. But in this wonderful koan, Yunmen's Bright Light, the first line Yunmen taught, everyone has their own light. If you want to see it, you can't. Melissa spoke yesterday of these legends of Zhaozhou, saying that he was such an amazing teacher that his lips gave off light. And here's Yunmen saying, everyone, all of you have your own light. And this koan actually is an adaptation of something that appeared in a collected sayings of Yunmen, I believe. So as Zen began to be written down several hundred years after these masters lived, one of the first kinds of collections were the sayings of the teachers, so the sayings of Yunmen, the sayings of Lin Chi. And I believe it's from the sayings of Yunmen. It's a slightly expanded version, and it goes like this. It says, in his room, Yunmen imparted some words to teach people. He said, all of you right where you stand, each and every one of you has a light shining continuously, now as of old, far removed from seeing or knowing. Though it's a light, when you're asked about it, you don't understand. Isn't it dark and dim? For 20 years he handed down this lesson, but there was never anyone who understood his meaning. Later, Xiang Lin asked Yunmen to speak on their behalf. Yunmen said, "The storeroom, the main gate." He also said, "A good thing isn't as good as nothing." So these different versions, these seeds, in a sense, we might say, that came from, in some way, from Yunmen, but then that are appreciated and co-created in some way by his followers and by people inspired by them. But in this version I just read from the record of Yunmen, I love all of you right where you stand, each and every one of you. This insistence on inclusiveness, because it is so easy to imagine that we are somehow different. It's quite ironic how universal this is. One of my friends called it terminal uniqueness, that each one of us indeed believes that we are the one exception. The monk who asked Zhao Zhou, does a dog have Buddha nature, might have been asking, even me, this Buddha nature or this light, everyone has a light. Well, yeah, maybe everyone but me. And part of this, he goes on to say, Yunmen, I think quite wonderfully, each of you have your own light, and then if you try to see it, you cannot. I think this is such an important point to explore and to realize in our practice. When I began my spiritual quest, I guess quite early, but I was most conscious of it when I was at college, and was so disappointed. I went to one of these high class schools, and I did everything I was told to do, and I was quite successful. I was on the university senate and doing well, and I was quite miserable. And I was so disappointed because I had been told if I was a really good boy, if I did really well, then that would be enough. And I was quite dutiful, quite a good boy. And found you could actually control the world a little bit by trying to give people what they wanted. And if you gave them what they wanted, they would praise you. But at college, I grew quite disillusioned because I saw that succeeding did not make me feel any more connected. In fact, I felt more and more alone, more and more desperate in some way. What I had been told clearly was not so. I had a taste of awakening, of non-duality. And in this taste of non-duality, was quite alive to this other path, for me, first in the Christian metaphor, and looking for awakening and for some kind of life to be close to God. I really wanted to live a life that was perfectly aligned with love. This seemed to me to be the only thing worth doing. And having read of many religious people and spiritual people, I could imagine my path of growing more and more holy until one day there would be a big parade for me because I was so holy and so humble that everyone was really astounded. And in some way, I hoped to be able to see my own light. That was my wish, that I could see that. But Yunmen so wonderfully reminding us that none of us get to stand outside ourselves. Many of us can see this light in other people. Many of us can appreciate when someone speaks the truth, or with someone we admire, or we see some simple act of kindness, and we begin to see that each person is a Buddha. For me, when we truly see another human being, we cannot help but fall in love. To truly see the struggles that each human being has been through, and to see how each of us has done our best, worked so hard through so many difficulties. When we begin to see this, it's quite lovely to see how everyone is just themselves and does not need to be different. We cannot see this in ourself. If we try to see ourself, it's like, as we heard yesterday, riding the ox to find the ox. Going into a dark room with a flashlight to look for a flashlight. We shine the beam everywhere cannot find the flashlight anywhere. Where is it? Where is it? And so this idea that each one of us, that you have this light, that you have this awakened nature, is not something that you can know. This is beyond knowing and not knowing. And this is where, in part, we are asked to operate on faith. We say the three pillars of Zen are determination, doubt, and faith. So determination, of course, come down to the Zendo, sit, knees hurt, sit, wonderful state, keep sitting, terrible state, keep sitting. This determination to come and to stay. And doubt is this great, well, many levels. On one hand, a kind of curiosity, not certain, not dwelling in certainty, but dwelling in not knowing. And also the great doubt of, what is it? What is going on here? Who am I? Like, really at it, really beginning to care about this doubt. And then faith is not what we tend to think of as faith or belief, not reciting some doctrine that we must believe, not being good Zen Buddhists. But faith is the willingness to enter in to our life without knowing. It is dark, dark. If you know where you are going, you are still in the land of delusion. If you think it's going well, you are mistaken. If you think it's going poorly, you are mistaken. It is dark, it is dark. That we must enter into our life to appreciate our life, to live our life, requires that we die. All of the people you have been, all of the things you have done well and poorly, all the things you're proud of, all the things you are ashamed of, they are already done. You cannot change one tiny little thing. But there is the invitation to let that all be. And to enter into this moment. What is this moment? And when we enter, as Mike Herzog was talking last night, to enter without being attached to preferences, when we are willing to step into the aliveness of the moment, it is not the aliveness that happened before. Now, this is where it gets really tricky, especially if we sit for any length of time, I would say 5 minutes or more. We begin to see that there are some familiar places, familiar mind states, familiar places we come to. For some of us, it might be a place of deep sadness. For some of us, a place of a burning anger, or of hopelessness, or wild anxiety. But all of us have these familiar landscapes that we come to, and so easy to think that the purpose of Zen is to get us out of that place to be in some better place. Oh, I would like a better place than this, please. I would like what I've read about in the books. That sounds so nice. But the truth is that this place that is so familiar is the doorway. This place is utterly, I want to say utterly new, and of course in some way not utterly new, but the invitation is to, can you be curious about this place? We talk about saving all beings. And quite a mystery, what does this mean? In the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha tells his disciples, if you want to be a bodhisattva, you must save all beings. But if you think that there are any beings outside of you, you are mistaken. So how do we save the many beings that we are? And part of how we do this is when we meet those parts of ourself or those mind states that we most do not like. All of us have these places, and all of us want to keep those parts of ourselves carefully hidden away. Let me either hide them away or let me work on them so I can get rid of them. And once I get rid of them, then I will whatever. But this invitation is to enter into this place, to have the faith and not the belief. So this is not about positive thinking. It's not, this is the Dharma, this is the Dharma, this is the Dharma. But much more open, what if this is what I've been waiting for? What if this is my true life? What if this is not what I think it is? And so entering into the dark is entering into the light. This is not the dark as opposed to the light, or the light as opposed to the dark. Each one of you has a light, and these were the Buddha's final words. Of course, be a light unto yourself, or maybe you are the light itself. There is nothing outside of you to run after, nothing inside to find. You are the light. If you try to see it, you cannot. But you can live and embody and be embraced and be intimate in this light that is dark. And then the storeroom and the gate, the refrigerator and the front door, everything shines with this light and rises up to meet you. Yunmen's Bright Light, Case 86 in the Heikigan Roku. Yunmen taught, everyone has their own light. If you want to see it, you cannot. The darkness is dark, dark. Now, what is your light? He answered himself, the storeroom, the gate. He then said, it would be better to have nothing than to have something good. Thank you. So please sit comfortably. We'll have our Dharma dialogue. Just to remind you, we're being recorded. If you'd like to say something off record, we can easily turn it off and then turn it back on. So welcome your questions, your resonances, complaints.
Yeah. This anxiety I've had all my life, I can't believe this is what I've been waiting for.
Right.
I mean, that is so amazing.
Right.
I've been looking everywhere.
Right.
Anything to get away from this
yes.
state.
Yes.
And it's just here.
I know.
So.
Yeah, and the list, right? For you, anxiety, that's probably true of a number of people here.
Yeah.
Depression, anger, difficult relationships, body stuff. Oh, if only that would all go away.
Right.
And it's like how, I mean, I can feel it from your expression. This is what my Buddha nature is.
Yeah.
What? It's what I love that. It's what I've been waiting for this. What?
Or I've been waiting for this?
Yeah, and this is why, you know, I always say that this teaching is subversive. Because this whole culture is based on self-help, self-improvement. You know, we're talking about dying to the self, not improving the self. And this is how we do it. We say, oh, wow, what? Oh my goodness, how could it be? And then we slip back. No. I think if I practice Zen, I will be a cool person. And then we look around the corner and think, like that person.
Right.
Thank you so much, Bill. Yeah, did you miss this?
Well, just saying, sometimes we call this the great bait and switch of Zen.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, we all do come. I haven't been waiting for this all my life. And then really, this is it? So David tells us, you've been waiting for this anxiety your whole life. No. But you didn't stand up and decide, you know, and go pack up your things and leave either. There's something about this that feels like an enormous relief. Finally, we're talking about what's true and what's real for all of us.
Yeah.
Right? These things we want to get rid of and are
wrong. And you know, the teachings, this is a pervasive teaching through the great vehicle of Buddhism. It's not true in all forms of Buddhism or religions, but sometimes in Tibetan Buddhism it's called meeting the demons or feeding the demons or befriending the demons. You know, so the anxiety is terrible. Right? It hurts, it gets in the way, we would like it to be gone. But this realization that you had through hearing what David said, and I think it wasn't the first time you heard it, but sometimes it's like, oh right, I've been waiting for this all my life. I've been waiting for the demon to come in the door, and instead of barring the door and trying to figure out ways to get rid of them, we become curious about them and get to know them, become actually friends with them. That frees them to not be tight in their expression. And because anxiety is what has preserved your life up until this moment. If you didn't have it, you wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And all our ancestors, you know, the development of human beings, fear and anxiety are really, really useful.
Well, I couldn't even talk about this with other people for most of my life until really the last 3-4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and expecting, of course, a revulsion, you know, a pushing away of me if I express this. And it's been really anything but that.
Yeah. Great, thanks.
Thank you so much.
David.
You kind of went where I was thinking, but, I mean, for the longest time, and I'm excluding myself if I say I don't have this idea, but the idea that, I mean, for me, panic, yes, it's a door, but it's kind of like a door you can push through somehow and get out somehow on the other side, me in opposition to this thing. You said befriending it. I know Pema certainly said that. I think of it as like, till there's no perturbation, there's no reason to have any mental, physiological disturbance when this arises, because there is no conditioned response to this.
Right. I think you're right. It is that allowing it to arise, my teacher used to say that the requirement for entry is to give up your opinion. And this opinion of this is bad, I want to get through it, all of that. And I think you're saying, which seems to be true, to be there and to stay. So anxiety arises, panic arises, it is panic. Or it is that energy, even to call it something. Mm-hmm. You know, because it has all of these, it is energy. It's said that the Buddha, when he was sitting under the Bo tree the night of his enlightenment, was assailed by all of these disturbances. And he did not fight them. He did not get through them. But he saw their true nature, which is light. And then what we called panic comes, and it may still be an unpleasant clenching, but we don't have to run away from it. It doesn't have to disturb us. It is just, life in this form.
So I think it's important to say, I want to say it more clearly, the transformation that happens in Zen is not elimination of things. It actually, you know, the metaphor we use, that the Buddha used, was the arrows come and they turn into flowers, right? So, but that can be like yuck. It's a little bit too sweet, maybe. But it's like to find that every single thing that arises as human beings is there for some protective and loving purpose. So that's what I was trying to get to. So the anxiety that protected you all your life, you don't want to get rid of it. For some of us, it's depression, which actually takes us down to the darkness. You know, if you don't say good or bad, right? Or anger, you know, rage, it's protective, right? So all of these things arise not as absolute goods or bads. Oh, we might say happiness, you know, it could be problematic too. If you meet it as something, it turns into compassion, you know, and everything can turn on a dime into something that prevents us from being free. And it also can turn on a dime into the very thing that I've been looking for, the very thing that helps us to be free.
Thank you for that wonderful talk. I guess my question is sort of about the subversiveness. It brings me back to the first session I sat here summer of 2018, and somewhere in that session I felt a little sort of very unexpected liberation during, I think, Dharma dialogue, when, you know, it was, but the feeling for me is, and I'm sure it's tied up with avoidance and so on, but the way it kind of manifests in my head is actually responsibility. I remember saying, you know, this moment of feeling like, oh my God, do the police know about you people? It seems like I carry around some sense of duty and obligation that constrains me. It's the good boy thing, I guess, you know, that I have to do these things, and I'm not doing them well enough yet, and you know, I've got to do those things. I'd like to give myself to Zen, I'd like to give myself to my koan, and I'm starting that, but I can't really do that until I, you know, right? Mm-hmm. But it comes to me in the form of responsibility. And it really feels, I mean, it actually reminds me of sort of the freedom of dancing in a Grateful Dead show. You suddenly think, I can just dance, and the world will, you know, take care of itself. And that felt pretty subversive. You know, a lot of people thought it was subversive and socially responsible, and you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just wanted to sort of give voice to that form of the demon. I mean, I suppose it's tricky territory in that there is such a thing as ethics, right? We are not without responsibility, but somehow the responsibilities that I'm talking about right now are hindrances instead. And very hard to let go of, because they seem so, you know, so much in charge.
Yeah.
And so appropriate somehow.
Yeah.
Of course you want to be good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I would say sort of everything that arises can be subverted in this way. Let's look at responsibility in the way that you're talking about it. So it looks like the black and white, right and wrong version of that has not served the world very well. Right? All you have to do is look to Australia right now, to Syria, to Iraq, Iran. It's not working. So this kind of responsibility, the subversion of the old version of it, then you're really responsive to the suffering of the world. And that's where our ethics come out of. Not because we shouldn't do it, but we know what happens when we do it. And we know how much harm it causes. And then, you know, then everything expands once again. So more responsible. You're actually, not because you want to be a good boy, but because there's nothing else to do in the face of suffering but respond. And in the face of joy, but dance.
And I guess the other thing I'm thinking as you speak is a lot of my responsibility is feeling like the world is really fucked up, and I gotta fix a lot of things about it. You know, but actually every moment, I mean, even in disaster, I suppose, even in getting killed, every moment is disappearing, right? You don't have to fix the past.
Right.
You can't.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really a strong delusion for me. It's like, some things went wrong, I gotta take care of them. In me, in Australia, somewhere, somehow, I've gotta fix the things that have gone wrong first.
And that takes us away from this work on the cushion, which is, you know, you said all these things that then I will, or until, where we postpone our life and feel quite virtuous about it.
Right.
And this wild possibility of not waiting a moment longer, and that this is how we save the world, starting here, waking up.
Liberation, too.
Yeah,
from the past.
Yes.
Jenny.
About the light, I feel like I see it sometimes, especially when I leave Sashin, like I walk past people on the sidewalk and I see them go by, or like people on the bus want to talk to me. It's like all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really think it's my light. I think it's it's something that I'm carrying out of here into the world.
Well, I would say something that you touch here that comes through you in the world. It's not that it's here, but we realize it or remember it.
Yeah, right. And that's always there. I mean, I have that same experience. Like, something must go on because people come up to me and do that right after Sashin, and then it goes away. Mm-hmm. But I realize that it is not something, it's not something that's, that I acquired and then leaves. It's something that's always there within us, this light that we can't see. And then I think there are ways that I still don't understand that I cover it over. It covers itself. Mm-hmm. It hides. And then we keep touching back here, thank God. And the light is allowed to shine again.
That Leonard Cohen thing about the broken places or where the light gets out, I always want it to, or where it gets in, and I always want to change it to where it gets out. Yeah.
Well, I think it's right. This what David said in the talk about, you know, if you think to save all beings, you have to, they're other than you, right? Things are coming in and going out all the time through those broken places. This goes back to Bill's original comment and also David's, you know, that if we didn't suffer, we couldn't experience or taste liberation. But I had this insight in the Dharma dialogue that I don't think I ever quite understood before. We love our suffering. We love, you know, our self-identity as a person with anxiety or a person who's a good boy or good girl, or, you know, we hold on so tight to that. And one of the other transformations is the grip releases. So it becomes a functional thing rather than me, I am this, I am that. It's so scary to let go, to open the hand of thought, as we say, and just be present to these things. The grip is tight, and this is me. You know, you don't understand, I suffer. You don't understand, I'm depressed, I'm anxious. I have these anger problems, whatever. And so that I think when that starts happening, the light can't help but shine and be received. And I think one of the things that happens when we say it wears off, I don't experience that so much anymore, the wearing off. I experience myself as tightening up again. But other people experience me as being full of light, right? And just, no, but I'm not. So there's some way that addiction to, you know, no, I couldn't be the one who's light-filled. Come on, give me a break. Look at me. I'm such a terrible excuse for a human being. The self-concept, right?
Well, I wonder if it's like, you know, you can't see your light. You can't really see your darkness. And I keep trying to see my darkness sometimes. Oh, I've got this special darkness.
Well, you do.
I do.
On that note, let's sit for a few more breaths before walking.